Hello, Representative.
Hello, how are you?
I'm fantastic. Thank you so much for calling in and joining us today.
Of course.
You know, we really appreciate it because, you know, it's, I've been in situations where I've gone in front of not necessarily friendly audiences, so I really appreciate it. And we want to be respectful of your time, and so I'm going to try to limit my questions to just questions about Senate Bill 202, okay?
Sure.
Fantastic. So I think it's really poignant that we're talking to you about this today because you represent Fayetteville in District 84, and that's where the Fayetteville Fairness Ordinance came up last year, and there was a special election held in which they did away with that ordinance. And I guess my first question would be, do you think that Senate Bill 202 is in direct response to the Fayetteville Fairness Ordinance?
Yes, I do.
Okay. I thought that maybe you would. Yeah. Do you want to talk about that at all or expand a little bit?
Yes, I would. The first thing I would say is the last thing I wake up in the morning trying to do is think about things that are going to be viewed as harmful to any group of our citizens, anybody. And this certainly was not something that came from that type of an approach. What we had in Fayetteville this past summer is what I consider to be an extreme overreach. And the overreach was due to two major factors that had one major outcome. The major negative outcome was creating chaos for the business legal system in the city of Fayetteville. And the two major causes of that were, number one, adding a large number of new protected classes into the law in Fayetteville and dramatically changing the way law is applied with regard to businesses as part of that ordinance. So, for example, if federal laws say businesses of a certain size, 50 people or more, are supposed to comply with these sets of rules and regulations, and small businesses are supposed to comply with different sets of rules and regulations, the Fayetteville ordinance really kind of threw those things to the side. The other thing it did is it set up a city-administered, I'm going to use the word court, but I'm going to put the word in quotes because it's obviously not literally a court, but somebody to make a decision that a business or somebody else had committed a violation or a crime or whatever you want to call it. And while people argued that, well, geez, that's just a fine, it's just a minor fine, it might even be as small as $5 or $50, the reality is if you are convicted of something, no matter how small, that becomes the perfect bit of evidence to bring a major civil suit against an individual or a business and say, gosh, if they were adjudicated as guilty in this forum,
right,
we now can sue them for unlimited amounts of money in another forum.
Well, it's not criminal. It's a civil statute, and there's no conviction in a civil case. So, I mean,
you
couldn't be convicted of a crime.
I'm with you, but you and I both know that if, regardless of how minor the penalty is from that specific action, as a lawyer, and I'm not a lawyer, but I wouldn't have to be a very smart one to say, hey, wait a minute, this individual or this business was convicted of this minor civil thing.
Again, it's not a conviction, but go ahead.
I understand. They were adjudicated as guilty of this.
It's not an adjudication. That you're still using criminal court words.
You tell me what the word is, and then we'll use your word.
Yeah,
whatever it is.
You are levied a civil penalty.
Okay. And then when I go to court and I say, because you were levied a civil penalty, you're obviously guilty.
No, there's no guilt. You've got to stop using that word. It doesn't work in civil court.
I can promise you there would be lots of lawyers that would be taking those things to court over and over again. So
in
the
civil
bottom
court.
Line is the ordinance in Fayetteville was such an overreach with regard to the chaos I perceived that it would bring to business that I asked the city council, and I spoke to them twice when this was on open hearing, please, please, please go back and do something differently. The way this is designed is not going to work, and my fear was that this would end badly for all of us, because it certainly has ended badly for me. I do not like being put in a position where I feel the only way we can really protect the businesses and residents in the city is to pass what I consider to be a very heavy-handed law at the state level. But I was unable, given the choices, two not good choices in my view, to see another way to make sure that we could protect the city of Fayetteville from that same thing coming back again. So I don't feel good about this, but I have to stand by my vote for 202, and that was really the reason for it. I don't like taking away the local control, but I felt that was the least bad choice I had.
Well, I'm glad that you brought up local control, because we hear a lot about home rule and about local power and local hands. Specifically yesterday, the legislature worked on fluoride in the water. And so my question would be, if it's okay for a community to regulate the fluoride in its water, why not be able to make a civil rights ordinance?
Yeah, and in principle, frankly, I agree with you. And I believe if in Fayetteville there would have been an approach that did not create what I call the legal disruption to business law that was designed into that specific ordinance, not all ordinances, but that specific one, we would be in a very different place right now. And my concerns that I believe, if you know, it's on video, I believe, if you look at the talks I gave at the ordinance hearings, were this tremendous overreach of 119 in the specific way it was done. That level of overreach was going to create a bad outcome. I could not predict exactly what that bad outcome would be, but in my experience as a legislator, when I see a group that makes a tremendous overreach, you usually wind up with bad outcomes. 202, I agree with you, is a heavy-handed approach, and in order to protect the businesses of Fayetteville, I had to make the unpleasant choice of taking away some local control, and I'm not happy about it.
So in a sense, you voted against your own principle.
Well, there's multiple principles in everything we do, and
sure.
Clearly one of my very strongly held principles is local control, and yes, I did have
sure.
to go against that principle.
Well, you said earlier that we couldn't necessarily predict the outcome, but when you look at some larger cities around the country like Denver and Houston and Dallas, we actually can predict them because those are all economic powerhouses and they all have non-discrimination ordinances with regard to LGBT people. So we actually do have really solid examples of it working and not being a disruption to the business community.
Well, I would love to compare the ordinances they have in those places with the ordinance that was 119, and to compare the differences, because my hypothesis is, and I won't pretend to be an expert in those, but my hypothesis is those were not anywhere near as overreaching with regard to the disruption in employment and employment law that was embedded inside of Ordinance 119.
Sure. I want to bring this back specifically, though, to 202, because it seems like the way it's written that it specifically excludes some groups. And we were talking earlier on the show about how a city couldn't, for instance, make an ordinance against age discrimination or against discriminating against veterans. Was it your intent to leave these kind of groups out?
Well, I think what the ordinance does is it says whatever classes, protected classes, currently exist in federal law or state law.
No. It specifically doesn't say federal law, and that's another question of mine, because if it did say federal law, then that would indeed include LGBT people. So is this like an effort for interposition or nullification of federal law on a
no.
state level,
no.
or do you guys just leave it out? What I'm really trying to drill down to here is this more about making sure that LGBT people don't get protection than it is about commerce, because it seems that way?
No. If the Supremacy Clause in the Constitution gives federal law authority over state law, and it's actually the same principle which enables the state law to prevail over local law, municipality and the law. So,
sure. So let me ask you this. When this law passes into law and it gets challenged in court, which I can almost assure you that it will, and it costs state taxpayers thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars to defend in court, and we lose because the federal law already protects LGBT people and this would run afoul of that, is it worth it? I mean, you know, roughly one in six kids goes to bed at night in Arkansas hungry. is it worth spending that money to defend a law that, frankly, isn't written very well?
The federal law and the group protections that are established in federal law, as I understand it, cannot and would not be the intent, absolutely would not be the intent of SB 202 to try to trump the federal law. So as I've even talked to the sponsor of the law,
then why not put federal law in? You know, it says that if it's not already included as a protected class in state law, but it specifically leaves federal out. Why not put that in if it's not trying to trump federal law?
Yeah, I'm not a lawyer, but my belief is, and I got to be careful because I wasn't part of drafting the law, but my belief is that it's not necessary because it's known that federal law is above the state law. And I'll give you an example. I'm currently working on a gun bill which would allow concealed carry permits on college campuses.
No, actually it wouldn't just allow them, it would mandate that the universities allow it, because you guys did this last year and made it an opt-in, and every single four-year and two-year university in the state opted out. So what you're talking about is yet another law that Arkansans don't want.
Well, and but the point I was driving at is the law about college campuses would allow, if you had a concealed carry permit, for you to carry on campus. And people have asked me, well, what about secondary schools and elementary schools? What are you going to do there? And I've been very clear with them, absolutely nothing. And the reason is federal law trumps state law, and federal law, I believe it was the Gun Control Act of 1990, prohibits concealed carry on elementary and secondary schools. So the state law and the state concealed carry laws only regulate higher education, the colleges, because federal law deals with the other areas. So I believe that same principle, it's not said because it's known that federal protections are absolutely in effect. The state law does nothing to impede those federal protections, and cities would be able to pass laws that regard any classes that are protected by the federal government or by the state. That's my understanding of how this goes into effect. There's no intention to try and undo anything that's federal law here.
Well, I think that there's probably going to be a legal challenge, and that's exactly where you're going to see it from. But we can agree to disagree on that.
Sure.
I just want to ask a couple of other quick questions, because, again, I want to be respectful of your time.
Of course.
But you actually took campaign contributions from some Fortune 100 companies like Walmart and Coca-Cola and Verizon, and all three of those businesses include LGBT people in their employment non-discrimination clauses, and Walmart actually goes one step further and extends full family benefits to the same-sex partners of their employees.
Sure.
And so my question is, are these companies wrong? Is Walmart wrong, or are you?
Oh, my goodness. Why? I don't understand the relationship to your question and the state rules that I just did. Of course, those companies are free to have the policies that they choose, and I'm a big supporter of Walmart. I worked for Procter & Gamble myself for many years, and Procter & Gamble, as you know, has some of those same kinds of rules.
Well, I would put to you, though, that the relationship is exactly the commerce that you talked about when you brought up the commerce clause.
Well,
we've got businesses in Arkansas, huge businesses in Arkansas, that have already made a stand on this issue.
Right. And if I go back to what was going on with 119, the Chamber of Commerce in Fayetteville was opposed to 119, even though they're not going to make a statement about what I would call social issues. The Chamber of Commerce's concerns were the same as mine, which is the disruption to business law that was embedded in the way that ordinance was designed. And there are tremendous concerns about that. And in fact, they were so great that the people of Fayetteville, who are very open, and this is a very welcoming community, the people of Fayetteville, in a special election where it's very difficult to get people interested in going to the polls,
sure,
actually went and defeated that specific ordinance. And sure enough, you know, within 24 hours, the people that had put it in place in the first place were already talking about bringing it back. So the issue here with 119, and the issue that drove my votes, is the legal disruption of the method that was being used. I'm tempted to say that I feel that some groups like gays and lesbians were almost used as a Trojan horse would be the wrong word because it's too strong of a phrase to kind of put a disruptive legal impact on local businesses. And whether that was intentional or unintentional, I'm not sure. But I do know that it was the legal disruption that I found so difficult to accept and so fearful would drive jobs and job growth out of Fayetteville. And that's the massive issue that I had with that ordinance.
But aren't you afraid that something like, like SB 202 is going to keep other businesses from even locating in Arkansas? Because it really sets a tone of intolerance, I think, for our state. So aren't you worried with regard to commerce and specifically interstate commerce that businesses are going to take one look at headlines like these and say, we don't want to go to Arkansas. We want to go where all of our employees are welcome.
Now, I'll tell you the reasons that really doesn't bother me at all. Number one, as you mentioned, many wonderful Arkansas companies like Walmart have very strong LGBT protections in place. And those protections will all stay in place. There's nothing in these state laws that are going to change anything along those lines. Private companies in Arkansas will be able to do and manage their policies, their human resources policies, as they choose to do it. And I encourage that and strongly encourage that. I think it's going to have a neutral effect on employment. But if it had any effect, my hope is that businesses would see that when some purpose is going to dramatically disrupt the business climate. In this case, it was in Fayetteville, and it was the business legal environment is going to be dramatically disrupted, that as a state, we'll step in to protect the legal environment so that we don't have massive disruption.
This law specifically, it seems to target LGBT people specifically, and I'll tell you why. When we're dealing with local home rule and we're letting, let's say, counties set up their own alcohol sales laws, or when we let counties and cities levy sales taxes, or when cities do zoning requirements, there seems to be no problem there. It only seems to be when LGBT people are brought into it that there seems to be an issue on a statewide level. Why is that?
I think you're making a blanket statement when I would actually think it's a narrower statement. I think there was a very specific and difficult and unpleasant situation that happened in Fayetteville where the legal disruption to the business environment happened to be attached to that group. And, you know, it could have been attached to something else. Somebody could have come in with a totally different topic, put a regulation or a rule out there that would have disrupted business law, and we would have had to, you know, make some kind of a ruling on a broader scope, like at the state level, to fix that specific problem.
Sure. Well, you said earlier that you didn't feel like it was going to be a negative as far as employment goes, but I assure you, if you were an LGBT person who got fired from their job for being LGBT, it would negatively affect your employment. I disagree with you there.
This law shouldn't change any of those current things in Arkansas, because the laws we have in place today that and the level of employment that we've got among all groups of people, this law, SB 202, doesn't change any of those things. It doesn't put in place any new requirements. It doesn't take away any protections. It doesn't do anything to change the current.
Right. You're right, because LGBT people can already be fired in this state just for being LGBT. So you're right. It doesn't change a single thing with regard to that, which brings up the next question as to why do we really need this law? If it's not changing anything, why do we need it?
Well, because it's preventing something like 119 from coming back, where 119 disrupts the business legal environment and puts many, many, many jobs.
It only disrupts the legal and business environment if you discriminate against people.
I disagree. I think the way the law was structured, you didn't have to talk about anybody's behavior. I could have, for example, using that 119, and I'm not saying that all people in the gay community would want this kind of a law, and I'm not saying that this is the only way that people would want the rules to go, but this particular one was such that I, as a male, could walk into a business with a very large earring and then call that my gender expression as a male. And if I didn't get a job, I could make the case that that was due to the fact that the hiring manager thought I was inappropriately expressing my male gender.
Okay,
well, I realize that's a perturbation that is using the law to my own personal gain, that's a frivolous lawsuit. But my fear is when you make a rule where those kinds of things can be done, that we go from protecting a group of people into creating a legal environment which is very chaotic for our businesses, and I just didn't want that to happen. I'm very fearful we'll lose everybody's job.
Then why not just support a correctly worded ordinance? Why go for a state law that prohibits communities for deciding what's best for themselves and their legal community?
Well, you'd have to talk to the people in Fayetteville on the city council, because there was many, many hours of testimony, and there was many, many hours of speaking where people said, and I know I use the expression multiple times, this law is a tremendous overreach, and I spelled out how these legal issues to our business community were a massive problem. And rather than make adjustments, significant adjustments to fix those problems, the city council chose to drive forward and to try and shove home that particular ordinance.
So what do you say to people like me that think that 202 is a tremendous overreach of the state government?
I understand that, and I agree that it is heavy-handed, and I feel very bad that what seemed like the only way to prevent the very negative effects of a 119 involve a heavy-handed response. And I would just look at you, and I would stare at the ground, and I'd say, I'm sorry that we had to have such a heavy-handed response, but in my view, it was the only option available to protect the people of Fayetteville and the businesses of Fayetteville from the tremendous overreach of an ordinance like 119. And that's not a very good answer.
No, it's not a good answer, and I'll tell you why, because it seems to me like you do actually have another option, and that would be to present a better bill. I don't always agree with you guys down at the legislature, but I don't think you're stupid. I mean, you guys can write a good bill, I'm sure of it. So why not propose a bill that includes LGBT protections?
Well, when I said that to the Fayetteville City Council, when I said what you're proposing here with 119 is a dramatic overreach.
Right, but we're talking about 202.
No, I know. Now we're talking. Now it's like what I want to make sure that we don't do is there's not like a table cart turning where a group of people that was very focused on this issue in Fayetteville where this started, instead of them designing something that everybody could feel good about, that everybody could accept, that would not be dramatically disruptive to the businesses. Instead of doing that, they tried for a dramatic overreach. And that is where the real opportunity lies. Now, moving forward, now that we are where we are, we'll just have to look and see how things unfold.
Right, this law, SB 202, wouldn't just affect Fayetteville. It would affect the entire state. So we're talking about a state-level law.
Yes.
That would prevent cities from deciding what's right for them and their business community.
Right.
Right. And you're telling me that there's absolutely no better law that could be written. You guys can't come up with anything.
No, I'm not telling you that.
Okay. Well, then where is it?
Yeah. Well, and again, I would ask you, where is it?
I'm not a legislator, sir. Yeah, I can't propose laws to the legislature.
I understand that. There's 135 legislators and...
And not a one of them can come up with a decently written bill.
Well, and
it's kind of sad.
I understand your frustration.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that at least. Thank you very much. I don't want to take up any more of your time because I know you guys have a lot going on down there. Thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate it.
I appreciate the opportunity and your graciousness.
Thank you very much.
Fantastic weekend.
Come back on sometime. We appreciate you.
All righty.
Thanks. Bye-bye.